Welcome to the Horror of Polycephaly Aporia, Episode 1, Part 1, brought to you by Jughead's Basement, with guest star Miguel Chen from Teenage Bottle Rocket.
The drone of electricity in a dingy overhead light bulb is the first thing heard when they wake up. Two men begin to stir while looking up at a stained ceiling of a cold room. Cold concrete floors, a rusty red coagulated substance covers a drainage grate. An odious miasma of copper and sweat permeates the stale air in the room. Sensations felt when two sets of eyes awaken. John raises a hand to his face. The hand feels coarse, calloused, reeking of decades of manual labour. John thinks to himself,
"Huh, that's odd. I haven't worked a day in my life."
And Jason moves his legs with ease. Muscles feel stronger than ever. For some reason, he wants to jump out of bed and go for a jog. He thinks to himself,
I've never felt this way before. Oh, William Blake, your decree that the road of excess leads to the Palace of Wisdom was correct. My life of hedonistic pursuit, my mornings spent with chocolate shakes, my evenings with tacos and tequila, indulging in pleasures of both flesh and food in the hours between, seems to have resulted in what feels like physical perfection. Ich bin ein Übermensch. At least, I think so. Or maybe I'm just hungry.
John puts a hand in front of his eyes as Jason lifts his leg. John says,
"This is not my hand."
Jason says,
"This is not my leg."
They both say,
This is not my beautiful house.
A creeping realization of horror slithers into their separate minds as these two men awaken to find themselves implanted upon the same, yet more rambunctious and fit, strange body.
What did you do to me?
What did I do to you? We are two heads on the same ripped body. If I could have this body by myself, why the hell would I sew you onto it with me?
Look, if you didn't do this, who did? How is this even possible?
I don't know. But I don't think we should sit around here and wait for some fucking mad scientist to return. We need to get out of here and get some help.
That is the best thing you've said all day. And I remind you, it's the only thing you've said all day. So congratulations on having that spectacular record.
Ugh. You trying to start a fight? Because I'll kick your ass.
John raises the left hand of their shared body and tries to make it into a fist.
Now wait. Violence doesn't solve anything. We need to work together.
You're right. Fighting in this condition will literally only hurt myself. So how does this work?
Well, you were just planning on pummeling me with our right hand.
But I don't know how I did it. It just happened without me thinking.
Try raising that one again, but this time, let's think about it. And try not to hit me.
Under the brown-yellow light of a stained light bulb, both John and Jason watched as the right hand began to stir. The right side of the body leaned up. Jason watched the limb slowly raise, extend its wrist, and stretch its fingers.
I feel it moving, but I know it's not my hand that, well, is making my, our hand move. Let me see.
Jason's eyes squinted as he focused on the hand, and suddenly the fingers contracted into a tight fist. The muscles tensed. The bicep flexed, and the hand slammed down against the metal of the operating table. A dull thump of impact echoing throughout the cold room.
That is unreal.
It felt like you just took over my arm, just like that. As if it was my hand, but wasn't.
As John speaks, the strange left arm that now seems under his direct propriety begins to stir, bending at the elbow, a most proper place to bend, before raising itself above his head. A sprawling catcher's mitt of a hand opens its massive fingers before the palm is pressed down across John's mouth.
Fascinating. Do you remember how hemispheres of the brain control opposite parts of the body? You know, your left brain controls the right side and vice versa?
Well, vaguely. But a friend of mine just posted on Facebook that was recently disproven.
Well, our own experiment seems to have confirmed that Facebook post. I was curious if my proximity to the right hand meant I would struggle a little bit more in operating the left, yet it appears that both of these arms functioned with the same amount of effort.
You tested this hypothesis by trying to smother me.
Oh, I theorized it would be weird to feel your face with these new hands, and that you would feel the same sensation as well. Don't forget, you tried to form a fist in order to pummel me, so let's just call it even.
It felt as if I was trying to cover my own mouth against my own will. What is that?
It's a sound foreign to modern audiences of a certain youth, but a familiar sensation to those of recent bygone decades. It's the unmistakable ringing of an old-time telephone bell. John and Jason exchange sideways glances, and together, with a single exhale of what they assume to be a shared set of lungs, they rise. Muscles within massive limbs tighten, fingers turn into vices that press into the side of the metal table, as they slowly pull their body up to sit. From the seated position, the two are able to gain a better understanding of their surroundings. The walls of the large room are stained, covered in square tile, blanched the colour of yellow that only comes from years of going without a deep scrubbing. On a small stand next to them, there are a handful of objects that loosely fit the definition of surgical instruments. The operating table to the left is bare, the one to the right is not. There is a dirty white sheet pulled completely over what seems to be another body.
Oh my.
There is a wooden door halfway open. The sound of the ringing telephone comes from behind it.
We should answer that phone.
Wait, shouldn't we, you know?
Jason is about to signal one of the arms to point to the occupied table next to them, but before the action even begins, John seems to know what is already implied.
No.
But it could be one of us underneath. At least one of our bodies. Don't you want to know?
The operation left us like this. If you call this a success, I don't want to see what's left under that shroud.
Are you going to be this much of a stick in the mud this whole time? Where is your Lord Byron-esque sense of wonder? Have you not been introduced to the works of William Blake, or at least Hunter S. Thompson?
You're free to leave whenever you want.
Ha ha, very funny. Why are you so afraid to look underneath that sheet? It's nothing worse than what we're looking at right now.
Right now I'm more concerned about that phone ringing, so let's get this body moving.
Slowly, two heavy feet touch down upon the concrete. The sensation is alarming, and for the first time, the pair realize they aren't wearing any shoes or socks, or anything at all. They laboriously maneuver their body towards a chair stacked with clothes. As if set out for them, there is a pair of boxers, large cotton work pants, black boots, socks, an excessively wide neck white muscle undershirt, and a green button-up shirt with two separate collars.
Whether we like it or not, we are in this together.
All right, agreed, fine. Let's get dressed.
With much difficulty, yet an incredibly quick learning curve, they complete the arduous task of dressing themselves. With laces tied, belts buckled, and a body fully clothed, John and Jason exit the room of their unholy rebirth. With much comical confusion as to how to pick up the phone, John and Jason work out a plan to grab the receiver of the old-timey phone together and to hold it, also together, between their two heads.
Hello?
Hello. It's good to hear your voices.
What?
It worked.
What worked?
All in good time.
Where are we?
Don't worry. There's sufficient amount of food stashed around in there, and plenty of rooms to explore. It should keep you busy for as long as it takes.
As long as what takes?
All in good time.
Who are you?
Miguel Chen, author of I Want to Be Well, How a Punk Found Peace and So Can You, and The Death of You, a book for anyone who might not live forever.
You gotta be kidding.
Nope, quite serious.
You must have other important things to say to us.
Well, I'm a teacher and owner at Blossom Yoga School, and I play bass in Teenage Bottle Rocket.
Wait a minute. You mean you are that Miguel Chen? From Teenage Bottle Rocket? The Fat Records punk rock band out of Wyoming? The one that tours the world on a regular basis? The one that kicks ass?
That very one.
What does all this have to do with anything?
It has everything to do with anything.
For instance?
It's a good conversation starter. I like talking about the band and the sort of mutually beneficial relationships we get to have with our fans. I don't get to talk about that often.
How is this information supposed to help us?
How did I get in the band?
No. I said, how is this information?
Well, I started selling t-shirts and driving this band when I was still a teenager. And at the time, I couldn't be in the band because I was too young technically to play a lot of the bars that the band was getting gigs at. So I think the general idea was like, well, if Miguel can't get in, you know, we'll just sell our own t-shirts and make him sit in the band. But if he's a member of the band and can't get in, then we're really screwed. So my job was selling merch, selling t-shirts and CDs and driving. At some point, the old guitarist Joel called 3 weeks before a tour started and said that he could only do part of the tour that was coming up. Kind of scrambling to figure out what was going to happen, like how we were going to not cancel that tour. Ray and Brandon were like, hey, you know these songs, you wanna play in the band, like now's your chance. And I had just turned 21, so the age thing was no longer an issue. I already knew all the songs anyway. They asked if I wanted to play guitar or bass, and honestly I said bass because I thought it would be easier. I did that tour, it was seriously like 2 weeks notice, and right after that things kind of really started taking off for the band. Like the band had sort of its first level of success with Total and with Red Scare Records, but after that stuff really took off, you know. Warning Device and then first Japanese tour and Fat Records and all the things that Teenage Bottle Rocket became.
Okay, to recap, this has to do with us. How?
Well, I feel like our music can help people connect on some level to something greater than themselves.
Well, John and I are connected, so I'll give you that.
There's absolutely something spiritual about music, and being in a band often goes unsaid, or even unnoticed.
Well, I am sewed onto a strange body with another guy who knows nothing more than me about our situation. We are connected, literally, and I do feel like I can hear his thoughts, so something of what you say is interesting to me. Are you talking in riddles? Are we supposed to glean some knowledge from this?
You can find knowledge in the strangest places. Also, I think a lot of times people assume being in a band and touring is all rock and roll party fun time. They don't see the side where we have to leave our families behind and the things we miss out on. I like to talk about that stuff in ways that don't come off poor me or my life sucks, because my life most definitely doesn't suck.
I, for one, can say that our situation right now, right here, it does suck.
That depends on how you look at it.
Well, this conversation has been all great and shit, but Miguel Chen, what mischievous plan do you have for us?
I don't have a plan for you, but as for me, I have all kinds of plans. I'm working on a book with my buddy Brad about dogs and how you can connect better with them through mindfulness practices. I'm writing songs for the next Teenage Bottle Rocket record. We're trying to reschedule as many tour dates as we possibly can, as soon as we can. I'm trying to grow my online school at blossomyogaschool.com. You know, if you're really interested, you can check out miguelchen.com. That's a pretty good place.
Well, great, thanks. We'll be sure to look that up when we get out of this fucking place.
By the way, there are no windows, and all the doors that lead out are locked from the outside. So don't panic. You have to find a way to your own inner peace.
Yes, but which peace?
Also, everything Kyle says is a lie. But you can get answers out of him by asking the right, wrong questions.
Wait, the right, wrong questions?
What does that even mean?
Just call here if you need some yoga instructions to help calm you down. Goodbye, Polycephaly Aporia.
Goodbye? He just hung up. And what did he call us?
No windows, doors locked from the outside, old-timey rotary dial phone with dial removed so people can only call in. That is rather strange. Do you think we can trust Miguel Chen from Teenage Bottle Rockets?
Bottle Rocket, it's singular.
Really?
Apparently. I don't know if we can trust that element of him, but he also runs a yoga studio, so there's that.
Jason and John look back down towards the phone. Without speaking, they instinctively maneuver their right hand to pick the phone back up and place it against John's ear.
No dial tone.
They hang the phone up and look down the long hallway presented to them. Periodically closed doors protrude from the walls until light is seen no more and the hall recedes into darkness. They take a few hesitant steps forward, then slowly gain more optimism in control and direction. Their confident stride down the corridor is interrupted when, from beneath their feet, is heard,
"Watch where you're going, you big oaf!"
Looking down beneath their feet, embedded in the wooden panels, they see a woman's face.
What the?
They jump to one side, revealing the full-length reflection of a woman's facade. She's wearing red flannel pyjamas and bunny slippers. Jason and John reach down to the floor and wipe their hand across the reflection. They feel nothing but old wooden panel and dust.
I should think you should stop right there. Don't touch!
They quickly withdraw their hand.
Sorry.
Who are you?
I'm Jason.
I'm John.
You have two names.
There's two of us?
I don't think so.
What's your name?
I don't know.
We need help.
Can you help us?
Oh, yes. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, where are we?
I don't know.
Okay. How did we get here?
I don't know.
A strangely manufactured yet familiar sound radiates from a door near the end of the perceivable hall.
What's that noise?
I don't know.
Wait. It sort of sounds like digitally canned clapping.
Oh, wait. I do know. That's Kyle.
Kyle?
Do not disturb Kyle. He is graphing his bits.
He has human bits being grafted onto him?
Oh, like us?
Oh, no, my dear. Not like you. He is hammocking his gags, don't you see? So they don't flop.
His ears are floppy?
He's been turned into a dog!
No! Do not disturb Kyle while mopping his flop sweat.
What?
So he can head towards his capper undisturbed?
A cap? Is he trying to put on a hat?
No! That's just plain absurd. How could Kyle be wearing a hat?
We have to see Kyle. If there are other people here...
I'm people.
Hardly.
If there are other people here who can actually help us...
Then fuck Kyle's privacy.
Do not disturb or fuck Kyle.
What if we do disturb Kyle? What are you gonna do about it?
Yeah, you're just a reflection.
What? Oh. Then I guess... nothing.
Let's go.
Oh, I forgot. There is something I can do. Scream.
The mansion begins to shake to its core. Aged old books fall from shelves. A chandelier sways to and fro. Jason and John use the hallway walls to hold them up as they move forward toward Kyle's closed door. There are picture frames vibrating on the walls, each frame empty. No images, no landscapes, no artistic expressions whatsoever. Unless, of course, you are one of those snobbish artists who appreciate ready-mades or anti-art. Claire's reflection follows their every step, screaming upward at them from inside the floor. Then, for no reason, Claire's screaming subsides. She says,
"Well, what was all that about?"
What was what all about?
The screaming.
That was you.
I hardly think that is true. Who are you?
I'm John.
I'm Jason.
Wait, reverse that.
I don't have time for this. Goodbye, Polycephaly Aporia.
And with that, she was gone.
What did she call us?
I don't know.
Thank you for listening to Jughead's Basement subcategory, The Horror of Polycephaly Aporia, punk and underground interviews with horror story, starring John Jughead, Jason Strange, Steve Ball, and Claire Hall, with special guest Miguel Chen. Stay tuned for episode 1, part 2, with stand-up comedian Kyle Kinane. And now for the last bit of interview with Miguel Chen.
Did that tour. It was seriously like 2 weeks' notice. Right after that, you know, things kind of really started taking off for the band. Like, the band had had sort of its first level of success with Total and with Red Scare Records, but after that, stuff really took off, you know. Warning Device and then first Japanese tour and Fat Records and all the things that Teenage Bottle Rocket became.
You know, it's hard even for me to believe you weren't there from the beginning because you seem to fit in so perfectly. It just makes sense. I always even think, you know, I listen to older records and I still picture you, you know, behind there. So my question to you is, what do you feel like you added that sort of completed that picture? You know, I think Cody did the same thing. He sort of added something that helped complete the picture, but you obviously do too. So honestly, what do you think you brought to it besides just being willing to be there?
You know, you mentioned it feels like I've always been there, because in a way, like, I kind of always was. It was Brandon, you know, I would hang out at Ray and Brandon's house, like, every day as a teenager, and Brandon shows up one day, and he's like, hey, man, Homeless Wonder's out, Teenage Bottle Rocket in. Like, I think I was one of the first people that knew, and he started showing me, like, these demos they were working on, and, like, you know, seriously, I would jam these new songs with them way before I was ever in the band. And so in that aspect, like, Ray and Brandon and Cody, like, they were kind of like big brothers to me growing up. And so I think at the point where I was able to, like, join the band and be the fourth member, it was finally like the four brothers were in it together, instead of it kind of being like the three brothers plus the other guy. I think at that point was where it was like we shared just the same DNA and all of us had the same vision and knew what needed to be done to bring that vision to its potential.
Why did you write a book about death?
I'm a firm believer in our life experiences and the way that we go through those experiences and heal through them, that it's important for us to share that and to try to help other people with our experience, because all of us have these difficulties, and especially death is something that we're all going to face sooner or later. So for me, it was something I faced when I was pretty young. So I was kind of thrust into this, like, I've been able to have a happy life despite all of these losses, and a big part of me being able to heal and to be happy is to try and help other people in the same situation. So it's sort of this mutually beneficial, like, the more I help other people, the more I'm able to heal the pain that I went through and that I feel.
From what you detailed in the first book, I Want to Be Well, you weave your own personal story into each installment of self-improvement. You know, this is how I got to this point, and this is how the, like you talked about, like, I love your reference to how much you love tacos in here. As someone who had tacos for this morning, it was this evening's dinner, and I think it was yesterday's lunch, and it's going to be Monday's. You incorporate, like, your personality and your own experiences with each step of self-improvement. I get, like, the desire to sort of do I Want to Be Well, because you've reached that sort of sense of, like, okay, this is what has helped me. Maybe this can help you. Was, like, we're going through a period right now where death is even more by our side. We're all having, and it's also something that's going on globally, we're having this shared experience, and some have referred to it as a shared trauma, but it's more of like, I would say maybe just more of like a kind of like just, I'd say shared kind of global understanding or something. I don't, I'm struggling for the word, but like, was there, after you finished I Want to Be Well, was there kind of like still that like longing to like, to tackle what is perhaps the biggest question that faces ourselves as a species?
The death of you, even while I was writing the first book, that book was already a concept and was already going on. And I think I Want to Be Well was a little more like general, because I see a lot of like punk rockers who are pretty fucked up and don't know how to deal with life, and they don't know, you know, lots of super depressed people, lots of anxiety. And I was like, I think generally speaking, a ton of punk rockers could use self-help. And so I Want to Be Well was this general, let's make this accessible to punk rockers. The death of you was a lot more focused. Like, it's a topic that most people don't want to touch until they absolutely have to. And I was certainly that way, but it's been such a huge part of my life. You know, at this point, you know, I've been alive longer, like without a mom and without a sister, than I was with a mom and a sister. And so I think the fact that those things happened to me so young shaped the entire rest of my life. And so like, if there's one like main, I don't want to like pigeonhole myself. I also don't want to pigeonhole, but you know,
we're not here to kink shame. We're not. Yeah. It's 2020. We support you.
But you know, I don't want to pigeonhole myself. But if I could say, like, the root cause of pain and suffering in my life has been death, and also the root reason for me needing to like find healing and find purpose in my life has also been death. And in a roundabout way, sooner or later, I think all people get there one way or another. It's just that we try to avoid it as long as we possibly can. And so my purpose with this book was really like, it's going to hurt a lot less if you start thinking and preparing for it now.
When you said you were writing this already in your head as you were doing the first book, and I believe John reminded me, and I think I saw this earlier, but you have a third book?
Yeah, actually that book was like conceived, written, and released since like in the time since you guys approached me about this project. It was such a quick thing. It was, I've been tossing around the idea of doing a kid's book since my daughter was born. You know, she's going to be two at the end of the summer, and I've got another kid on the way. And so it kind of made sense, like, okay, these adult books I'm doing, this sort of like self-help with the punk rock twist and spirituality thing, I want to make that for kids and their parents, and I want to really simplify it. So I've been tossing around a few ideas with this artist buddy of myself, or this artist buddy, Dave Buist. And then all of a sudden, one night, as the quarantine kicked in and Dallas officially went under shelter in place, I just couldn't sleep one night, and I just grabbed my notebook and started writing, and this book came out. And I emailed it over to Dave that night, and within, I think, 3 days, he had illustrated the whole thing, and then the whole project happened so quick. Like, I was like, what do we do? Do we fish around for a publisher? He's like, I've got a buddy, independent publisher, and it was just the perfect fit, and boom, the book's out.
Nice.
So it was timely, because I had this drive to want to do the same sort of like, let's like self-help and wellness and open discussion and trying to see things as they really are, and maybe a little less drama in our lives. I wanted to make that for kids and parents, and all of a sudden the virus became this catalyst for, here's a good chance for parents and kids to have a discussion about uncertainty and to try to take away all of like the scariness and the drama and just look at it from a like compassionate kind of calm place.
That's wonderful.
Once again, thank you for listening to this new podcast on Jughead's Basement, the subcategory, The Horror of the Polycephaly Aporia, which was an idea that me and my friend Jason Strange got while we were in quarantine. Jason has an amazing other podcast that's really underappreciated called the 6 Foot Plus, SixFootPlus. You should look that up. And it has a lot of great punk rock and horror type influenced music. It's been going on for quite a few years, almost what, 10 years maybe? Please look up Miguel Chen, who was our wonderful guest today. And his site, like he had said, is miguelchen.com. It's miguelchen.com. Also, the song that was used throughout the podcast was a Teenage Bottle Rocket song that was called Bigger Than Kiss. And that came out around, I think, 2010 on the album They Came From the Shadows on Fat Records. So once again, like I said before, we hope to continue this. And our next interview will be with Kyle Kinane, an amazing stand-up comedian who also has some shows on Netflix. Thank you, and goodbye from John Jughead.